Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in to CBSSports.com College Football Podcast. Today we are continuing our conference preview series by taking it on down to the Southwest and the Big 12. And joining me on the hotline today, and you know, we don't have a sponsor for this hotline, Matt. It's Matt Hinton, Ion College Football blogger. You think we can sell the sponsorship of the podcast hotline to our own blog?
To our own blog?
Yeah. We've got that authority.
Yeah, I don't know why we'd want to do it, but maybe we could farm it out to Dr. Pepper or something. I mean,
that's
we should exploit that revenue opportunity.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we've got to exploit all of our different options. We got a very large footprint, of course. But for now, you know, unsponsored hotline, it is Matt Hinton, and I appreciate you joining me. And the Big 12, really, it's interesting if you think about everything that's happened in the past year and how far we've come. It seems like we've turned a corner, and I like one of the cool stories that jumps out at me is the fact that the two newest members of the conference, you know, they're stepping up into a more difficult level of competition, but it really seems like they could both be competitive, West Virginia and TCU, right away. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that those are both good common sense additions for the Big 12. It's really interesting because a year ago at this time, it looked like the Big 12 was about to come apart. I mean, remember, Texas A&M had just left the SEC. Missouri was obviously on its way out. Missouri had tried to get out the year before when the Big Ten was expanding, and Missouri was all but throwing itself at the Big Ten. They obviously didn't want to be there. And it looked like either Oklahoma or Texas was about to bolt for the Pac-12, as they had also almost done the previous summer. And everyone kind of assumed probably, I would say, about exactly this time a year ago, the Big 12 was on its deathbed. And now, you look at it a year later, that doesn't happen. They do lose Texas A&M and Missouri, but they replace them with, you know, equally strong programs, I think, in West Virginia and TCU. And, you know, it looks like as strong a league as there is in the country. I mean, obviously, when you have just 10 teams, you don't have quite as much punch as maybe the SEC does with 14 now. If you look at All-America teams and top 25s and things like that, it still tends to be dominated by the SEC, but I think that comes in part just because there are so many more teams now in the SEC. If you look at it on, you know, a per-team, per-capita basis, I think the Big 12 absolutely holds its own. And when you consider that they're playing a 9-game schedule and every team in the league plays every other team, the strength of schedules are certainly as tough as anywhere in the country, too.
Yeah, that's just a sheer numbers game at some point when it comes to looking at the All-American teams. And you know, it's funny, it seems like they were on their deathbed. I mean, this is when Ken Starr is sitting here, you know, making all these legal threats about just trying to keep it together. And, you know, not only are they right up there with the SEC, but with the establishment of the Champions Bowl, you've got to, and all the current 10 teams agreeing to the Grannon rights on the media rights deal, it really seems like they have moved from being on the deathbed to locked in one of the top three most stable conferences moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, just in terms of strength on the field, the Big 12 has always been there. They've always produced championship teams. It's been a quality league all the way through. And I think that it is more stable now. It's interesting that Dan Beebe, the commissioner, lost his job, but really he was the guy who held it together. I mean, he got the TV deal for them, which has come through, which has put them on par with the SEC and the Big Ten. You know, it may not be quite up to the Big Ten levels, but it's certainly in the ballpark. It forced them to fix the unequal revenue sharing, you know, where Texas was getting so much more than any other team in the league. You know, now that's more equitable. I think that they've come out of realignment. I mean, it looked like the Big 12 maybe was going to be the conference that realignment just really ripped apart, partially just because of demographics, just because, you know, there are no big TV markets or anything outside of Texas. Kansas, Iowa State, Kansas State, and who cares if they, you know, fall down to Conference USA or whatever. But it looks like they've weathered that, and it looks like it's going to be a pretty stable conference going forward. I think the only question now is, do they try to get back up to 12 teams to get to a conference championship game? I don't know, when you're playing a round-robin schedule, I don't know that you necessarily have to do that unless there's a really attractive addition. I mean, if somehow Notre Dame fell on their lap, which, you know, obviously is a long shot, then I think maybe they do that. I'm not sure that they just reach out and go for Louisville and Houston or whoever just to get to 12 teams. I think that they're pretty stable right now.
Yeah, when the memo was sort of offered out, because people try and play that numbers game where it's like, oh, if we add so-and-so, it'll add this much value to the deal. If we add Florida State, if we add Louisville, it seems as though the only real addition that would make sense for the Big 12 as far as actually increasing their value as a conference to ESPN and Fox would be Notre Dame. And until Notre Dame decides that they want to join a conference, and if they do want to join the conference, like you said, there's no reason. The Big 12, in playing a round robin schedule, do get a true conference champion. Whoever emerges on top has played everybody in the league, and they can say that they are the best team in that conference.
Right, yeah, and you don't have any kind of an upset either. I mean, when you come out of that situation. I mean, there have been several years in the Big 12, really more than any other conference, with the championship game where really the top team in that conference has been knocked out. I mean, they've had instances where the top team was knocked out of the championship game. I mean, Kansas State back in 98 was headed to the BCS championship game, and they were knocked out by Texas A&M, even though Kansas State was obviously the best team in the conference that year. You've had Oklahoma when they were upset by Kansas State in that game. Texas was knocked out of the championship game one year by Colorado. So that also eliminates that. And you have a true champion where everybody is playing everybody else. I mean, I guess you could still have a three-way tie, if you had a situation where A beat B, beat C, beat A. But I think that that's a fair trade-off.
Yeah, no, I think that would in the end end up being determined by BCS ranking. I think if you had the full three-way tie. But I want to jump on upsets, because it brings me to one of my favorite sort of aspects of the Big 12, particularly headed into this season, and it's with Paul Rhodes and Iowa State. They've proven to be a real spoiler for a lot of teams this year, and I got two games on the schedule that I've sort of circled. The first of which is on November 3rd when they host, I think they play, yeah, they host Oklahoma, and then they host right. West Virginia in their season finale on the Friday after Thanksgiving. And, you and I talked about this. The thing about Iowa State is you know that they're good. It's just the level of competition is that you go into it each game and you can't confidently say that they're going to win. But do you see them being able to pull another one of those upsets and sort of playing spoiler to either of those teams?
Well, yeah, so far they've done it. I mean, under Paul Rhodes, he's been there for 3 years. Each of those 3 years, they've pulled a big upset. They beat Nebraska at Nebraska. They've beaten Iowa. They beat Texas at Texas. Last year, they beat Oklahoma State, which knocked Oklahoma State out of the championship game. So Iowa State is consistently at least once a year over the last 3 years played above its head. I mean, I don't think that you can say that they're going to be any kind of contender or a force in the league just over the course of a season. They just don't have that kind of talent level. But once a year, Iowa State has come up and bitten somebody in ways that have made a difference. I mean, last year, that win over Oklahoma State completely changed the complexion of the season.
Nationally,
the BCS
too.
Race was
yeah.
entirely different after that upset. And Alabama wins the national championship because of that game. Alabama is not even in the discussion for the championship game if not for that. So Iowa State has played that role before. I think this team on paper looks better than the last few years. I mean, they've got some guys who have played. I still think they're on the bubble even to make a bowl game over the course of the season. But if you're just talking about pulling an upset here or there, I mean, yeah, I think Iowa State is always a team you have to be up for.
Yeah, because in that round robin, that's where you're really going to cause some problems. It's going to be the team that drops, the team that's at the top. Like, say it's Oklahoma. Oklahoma wins important games over West Virginia but suffers the one conference loss to Iowa State. then West Virginia takes care of business, except for the loss to Oklahoma. Then maybe you throw TCU in there, who has a, and that's sort of where November to me gets really, really interesting, especially in the Big 12, where it's just exciting football. You know, it's, you've got a lot of great quarterbacks, you've got a lot of great offenses, and you know, the likelihood for something stunning and exhilarating happen seems to be the higher in the Big 12. You know, for a fan of college football that just likes action, it's got to be the Big 12 or the Pac 12 above anything else.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of parity in the Big 12. I mean, that's what I like. And I think the only team that you can just say is not in the picture at all is Kansas. You know, the other nine are not. There's not. There's a lot of parity. I mean, between those teams. I mean, you still have some blowouts every now and then, but in general, you know, most any team in that conference among the other nine can beat any of the other teams on any given week. Looking at West Virginia's schedule before they play at Iowa State, the three previous weeks they've got TCU, at Oklahoma State, and at Oklahoma, and then they're at Iowa State. I mean, that's just the perfect trap game.
Especially after you finish those three, then you've got to turn around and head there. That's it's going to be tough for West Virginia. And I'm going to use that. Let's segue in. Matt sent me along his order of finish. And so what we like to do, want to make sure that all the teams get some love here in the Big 12 preview on the CBSSports.com College Football Podcast. And so, you know, through each team, Matt is going to give his greatest strength, you know, the thing that is going for that team the most, but then also the biggest question that still needs to be answered headed into the 2012 season. We'll start up at the top, the team that is most likely to be knocked off due to this parity, because they're at the top. Oklahoma, give me greatest strength and greatest question.
Well, the strength of Oklahoma, I think, is what it always is. I mean, first of all, obviously they're a talented team, and they have a veteran quarterback, Landry Jones, who's going to be a fourth-year starter there. He's going to have some very good receivers, it turns out. I mean, for most of the offseason, it looked like Oklahoma is going to be really thin at receiver because of several suspensions they've had there. But, you know, those guys, Jazz Reynolds and Trey Franks, are going to be back in the lineup. They've had Kenny Stills there. He's been at the top of that rotation the whole time. Trey Metoyer coming in, a true freshman. They just added the transfer from Penn State, Dustin Brown, who was a productive player there. That's going to be a pretty deep receiving core, it turns out. I mean, Oklahoma is going to do what it always does, which is throw the ball around fast-tempo, upbeat offense. I mean, they're going to put a lot of points on the board, which is what you always expect from Oklahoma. And I think that the question mark is the same as it always is for Oklahoma, which is the secondary. I mean, every couple of years or a couple of times every year, you know, they just have games where they break down completely in the secondary. I mean, you look at last year, it was Baylor, Texas Tech, the most inexplicable upset of the season was Texas Tech over Oklahoma. Secondary just fell apart in those games. And, you know, Robert Griffin, maybe you can understand it, but that seems to happen, you know, on a fairly regular basis to Oklahoma. I mean, the year before it was Texas A&M and Missouri. You know, and the year before that, you know, you've got, you know, Texas Tech again.
Yeah, Seth Dagey shouldn't be doing that.
It happens on a fairly regular basis.
Yeah, Seth Dagey should not have been able to do that to Oklahoma last year, especially with how quickly they were scoring. That was, of all the upsets and the parity in the Big 12 last year, the head-scratching one was right there at Texas Tech. Do you think that there's any chance? Because sometimes to me, I've always thought that, you know, you need to make sure that there is depth or something in the scheme that is on defense that is going to support an up-tempo offense like the one Oklahoma has. And Landry Jones, incredibly skilled at being able to march that team up and down the field and wears down opposing defenses easily, but do you think that that's also some of the problem in when these secondaries have breakdowns, particularly in the second half?
Yeah, I think so. You know, Oklahoma runs more plays than any other offense in the country. I mean, on an annual basis, Oklahoma is usually at the top. I mean, they go faster than anyone, and that does play on your defense. I mean, they had some injuries there last year. You know, this year they don't really have a lot of standout players. I mean, out to the general talent level there, is always high. But there's not one guy on defense that you go ahead and look at and go, hey, and that guy's really a star, especially in the pass rush. I mean, they lost Frank Alexander there, who's their best pass rusher last year. They also lost Travis Lewis, the linebacker. I think the defense is kind of a perennial question at Oklahoma. And the offense is going to have to put up a lot of points. But again, like you said, with putting up points, you know, also maybe puts the defense at risk.
All right, we're moving on to number two in Matt's order of finish. You got West Virginia, obviously returning Geno Smith, considered by our own Chris Houston as a Heisman contender. He was on the watch list. Making the move from the Big East, fresh off that 70-33 beatdown of Clemson in the Orange Bowl. What do you think is their greatest strength and biggest question for the Big 12 this season?
Again, obviously it's the offense. And actually, I think that I like West Virginia's offense a little bit more than Oklahoma's, even just because not only do you have Geno Smith, who I think is probably the equal of Landry Jones as a passer, but I think West Virginia has maybe the two best teammates as receivers in the country with Stedman Bailey and Tavon Austin. I think the only pair that really can match them maybe would be Robert Woods and Marquise Lee at USC. I think that when you put a senior quarterback with those two guys as productive as they've been in that offense with Dana Holgorsen installed last year. Last year was just the first year that they had it installed. I think with that experience, I mean, that offense is going to fit right into the Big 12, and it's going to be as explosive as any offense in the conference.
And then what's your biggest question?
And I think you have to go, again, back to the secondary. I mean, they're replacing replacing one cornerback, their other cornerback, the returning starter, and it was hurt in spring, sat out spring practice. They did not really face any strong offenses, any up-tempo offenses, strong quarterbacks in the Big East. I mean, you know, the Big East is a defensive conference. West Virginia was really the only team in that league that really started to open it up last year. Big 12 is completely different. I mean, you're going to be facing a lot of quarterbacks who can throw it around and some really up-tempo offenses. They haven't seen that, and they're breaking in a lot of new guys in the secondary. So I think that that's the question of how they're going to respond to that.
You know, and I agree with you maybe you could even argue that when you take sort of the all-purpose aspect into effect with Austin and with really how good of a ball catcher and just Stedman Bailey is, you could even argue that they were better than Lee and Woods. Because Lee and Woods, you know, they each provide a very dynamic skill set, but – man, when I was at that Orange Bowl and watching them run that fly sweep, and then you've also got Austin running kicks back, that's just, you know, that's exactly what you want, is the one guy that you can move all over the field, almost like a Percy Harvin type. But Bailey is about as good as they come as far as being able to make incredible grabs.
Yeah, I think that they compare. I think Tavon Austin compares very well to Wes Welker, because they're running the same kind of offense. I mean, Dana Holgorsen came up under Mike Leach at Texas Tech. That's where you learn that offense. I think Tavon Austin plays a very, very similar role in the slot. They can move him all over the field. He's a great – he caught 100 passes last year, I think, right? And then he's a great kick returner. He's as good a return man in the country. And then we in the Orange Bowl, he just killed Clemson on that fly sweep. So, yeah, I mean, Tavon Austin is obviously a productive player. And like you said, Stedman Bailey – I mean, he was just a sophomore last year and was just spectacular. He had about a half dozen catches that were really highlight catches, and he did it on a regular basis. I mean, he was consistent all year long. I mean, he caught 5-6 passes a game, averaged 17 yards a catch, I think, led the Big East. He's a real threat downfield. I don't know that I would compare him necessarily to a Michael Crabtree or a Justin Blackman, the kind of guys that Holgorsen has had before, but if he's not, he's close to being in that caliber.
All right, moving on from number two to number three, where you've got, in my opinion, and I guess you, I would guess yours too, the best defense in the conference. Moving on to Texas, so you think that sort of the rebuilding comes full circle here? How are you looking at Texas for 2012?
Well, that's the question. I mean, they've had a couple of rebuilding years. The difference this year between last year, I mean, I think that you have a lot of the same question marks, but last year, after they kind of fell apart in 2010, they went 5-7, really had a shockingly struggled. Obviously, the worst team they've had under Mack Brown. Coming into last year, they were kind of at the bottom of the top 25, and you were thinking, well, you know, it's Texas. They must have talent there, right? But there was nobody specifically that you could point to and say, okay, this is the guy who is going to come up and is going to turn the corner. And this year you have that. This year you have a handful of young guys who have played, who maybe have not turned the corner yet, but they're on schedule. I mean, you've got blue-chip guys all over the place. You know, you've got Malcolm Brown at running back. They've got another five-star guy coming in, Jonathan Gray. You've got Jackson Shipley and Mike Davis at receiver. You have offensive line that was very green last year. Now all of those guys have played a lot. You have the one place that they do have proven guys is defensive end. I mean, Jackson Jeffcoat and Alex Okafor are the best combo of defensive ends in the country, and they showed a lot of that last year. Linebacker, you've got Jordan Hicks. The corners, the young corners, Bendham and Quandre Diggs are both up-and-coming guys. Now, all of those guys have played. They all have the recruiting rankings and all that stuff from Texas. Now this is the year where it looks like, hey, you know, maybe they're going to turn the corner and maybe this is going to start to look like Texas again that you expect Texas. The one question mark on that is the quarterback. It's obviously the quarterback. They're still very young there. Neither David Ash or Case McCoy was able to hold on to that job last year. They both struggled. I know Texas fans, I think, are putting their money on Ash because he was just a true freshman last year. But they have to get better production out of that position. I mean, the rest of it is kind of for naught. They've had the best defense in the conference 4 years running. So, you know, doing that again is not going to be worth a lot if they're not better on offense.
Yeah, no, that's not going to be enough, especially with what you've got elsewhere in the conference. And, you know, how much longer do you think Manny Diaz would hang around if the defense continues to be – the defense continues to be strong, but there doesn't seem to be on-field results. Do you foresee him splitting to take what I assume to be opportunities as a head coach after this season?
Well, I don't know about after this season. I think it depends on you know, the opportunities that he gets. I mean, I think that the right offer, even if the offense did turn it around for Texas, I think he might leave for the right offer. I'm not sure that he's going to be necessarily driven away by anything that happens at Texas. But, you know, he picked up right where Will Muschamp left off. I mean, the defense really looks the same. It's the same style. It's still very aggressive. It's been just as effective. They've got the same kind of athletes over there. So I think that Manny Diaz eventually is going to be in line. He may not get a Florida job. That was a pretty good get for Muschamp. But I think definitely people in a few years are going to be coming after Manny Diaz.
All right, moving on to number four, we got Oklahoma State, fresh off, like we said, just being this close to the national championship game. Obviously, still got some questions, but a lot of big players back for the Cowboys. What do you see as their biggest strength and biggest question headed into 2012?
Actually, I think the biggest strength is the secondary, which was supposed to be their biggest weakness last year. But if you look at it on paper, Oklahoma State was much better on defense than they got credit for. They did give up a lot of yards and a lot of points, but a lot of those were just meaningless garbage time yards. I mean, a lot of that stuff showed up on paper, but really didn't have a lot of effect on the game. When they played Baylor, they shut Robert Griffin down. Baylor moved the ball on them a little bit, but going into the fourth quarter of that game, the score was like 49-3. You know, I mean, that was not a competitive game, but you look at the end, Baylor winds up scoring some points in the fourth quarter and gaining 600-something yards, and it looks like, wow, they got – you know, shredded by Griffin. That wasn't the case at all. They actually shut him down. They did that on a consistent basis, with the exception of maybe the Kansas State game. Both of their corners are back. Roderick Brown, Justin Gilbert, both were all Big 12 type guys last year. They got safety, who was the leading tackler, who kind of stepped in at the last minute for him to start last year. I actually think the secondary is probably going to be the best, the strongest part of that team. I don't know about statistically, because I assume it's still going to be very, you know, fast-paced on offense. But on the other side, now you're moving into a true freshman quarterback, and that's – who knows what's going to happen there. I mean, he was there. Wes Martin was there for the spring. They named him the starter. You know, now what? He's stepping in, an 18-year-old for a 28-year-old, Brandon Whedon, who's the most prolific passer in school history. So, I mean, you know, that's just a giant question mark, I think, for Oklahoma State. If he's okay, if quarterback is okay with that offense, I mean, we've seen that offense for years now and how productive it can be. It just all comes down to, you know, how ready is this kid to run it.
Moving on to your number five, TCU, one of the other newcomers in here. You know, in my eyes, a little bit of a long shot or dark horse, but my biggest question, and I'll sort of pose this to you, is I feel like the Horned Frogs get a lot of credit year in, year out, and deservedly so because of Gary Patterson and the work he's done, that, you know, they've got this phenomenal defense. But I think really last year we sort of saw, like, there was a big drop off from 2010 to 2011, and then you've got almost as many, if not more, question marks headed into 2012. And the question is, can TCU make up for it offensively, where they've still got a lot of firepower, when, you know, everybody is going, this is a much higher caliber of offenses that they're going to be facing, and do you see that being something that they're going to need to overcome?
Yeah, well, I think that they're going to have to. I mean, they're definitely going to have to. I don't know if they're going to have to score more points than they have in the past, but they're going to have to keep up the pace that they've had. Because TCU, I mean, it's always been known as a defensive school because they've been so good on defense for so long. But the last few years, the offense has really been up there. I mean, with Andy Dalton, his last 2 years there, when they went undefeated in the regular season both years, I mean, they're averaging 40 points a game both seasons. Casey Packel came in last year. They did the same thing. Really, it does look to me more like an offensive team on paper. There's some questions on the offensive line. They lost one of their top running backs, Ed Wesley, left. But they still have a lot of production there. I mean, Packel was just a first-year starter. Last year was very productive. They've got Josh Boyce was an ex-receiver as just a sophomore. Sky Dawson is a weapon there. They still got some depth at tailback. I think offensively they're going to have to kind of keep putting up the kind of numbers that they have, because defensively they do look a lot thinner than they have in the past. They weren't as good last year as they've been, and they are going to be facing much more explosive offenses than they're used to in the Mountain West. I mean, look at the Baylor game last year. I mean, again, you're talking about Robert Griffin and at receiver they had Kendall Wright. Who was also All-American draft pick. You know, Baylor just torched them in the first game of the year last year. And TCU is very young on defense. They've got a little bit of experience on the line. The secondary, they have almost none. They have one cornerback back, but the rest of the secondary is going to be completely new. And, you know, again, you're coming into a passing conference, I think, that it's not realistic for TCU to put up the kind of numbers that they have defensively. I mean, they're going to have to score points with people.
All right, so we've got his top five: Oklahoma, West Virginia, Texas, Oklahoma State, TCU. We're moving it right along with Kansas State. Is there one more year of Snyder magic left?
No, I don't think so. I don't believe in magic. I think if Kansas State is going to win 9 or 10 games this year, they're going to have to be better. They're going to have to, you know, just be a better blocking and tackling team. They won games last year, you know, by hook and by crook. They were 7-2 in conference play, and they were outgained by 100 yards per game in the conference. I mean, you can't outgain by 100 yards per game. You're supposed to go 2-7, not 7-2. I mean, that's just not a good performance. But they, you know, they managed to win games. They run kicks back, you know, overs. They win games by, I think they won four games by less than 4 points. They beat Miami by 1 point on the goal line. They beat Texas A&M in quadruple overtime. That's just not a sustainable in a conference that's this deep. You can't keep winning games like that. You know, you have to be a better team. So I definitely expect Kansas State to fall back to earth. And then again, they're not completely, you know, barren of talent. I mean, Bill Snyder's always done a good job there. Colin Klein's a great quarterback for them last year, very productive. He's back this year. He'll be a senior. The defense has some players. The whole defensive line's back. Arthur Brown at linebacker. Nigel Malone was a big addition for them. Had a junior college last year. Cornerback, led the conference in interceptions, and was all Big 12. So, you know, Kansas State, I think they're going to be all right. I think that, you know, if you look at them statistically, they may even be better than they were last year, because they were not very good last year on paper. But I can't imagine that they're going to win as many games unless it's a dramatically better, dramatically improved team.
Yeah, no, and the other thing, too, is it's terrifying when so much of the offensive production is not only on your quarterback, but it's a quarterback who's doing a lot of running. I mean, he was a 1,000-yard rusher last year.
Yeah, he was a 1,000-yard rusher on like 3-point-something per carry. He ran the ball more than any other player in the Big 12.
Yeah, and you've got so many hits on him. And Conklin's tough. I mean, the man's got a pair. I give it to him. But if he goes down, there seems to be a lot of questions right there as well, if you ask me. All right, moving on to number 7, we got Baylor. You know, Robert Griffin III is gone. Kendall Wright is gone. What's Baylor got left? You know, Art Briles, I think you've even said this. Art Briles is going to have a good offense. He's going to be pretty good. But how do you think they fare coming into 2012?
Well, I think you're right about the offense. Obviously, there's going to be a drop-off at quarterback. They're not even sure who the quarterback is going to be yet. But they still have some players. I mean, they still have Terrence Williams was a productive receiver. Lanier Williams has played a lot for them at receiver. I mean, they have, you know, 3 or 4 guys who have played a lot and been very productive for them at receiver. They don't have their best receiver, Kendall Wright, but they certainly have enough for Art Briles, who has, you know, had productive offenses at Houston and Baylor, and consistently, as you said, Art Briles are going to have a good offense. But the defense was a disaster last year. I mean, they were like 110th. I mean, you know, they won a lot of games, giving up a lot of points. I mean, they won games where they gave up 48 points, 36 points, 39 points, 38 points, 42 points. The bowl game, they gave up 56 points in that ridiculous bowl game with Washington. I mean, you know, that the defense was bad. It was a bad defense.
Yeah.
They won. Not even like Oklahoma State was a bad defense where they, you know, forced turnovers and, you know, were opportunistic or something after giving up a lot of yards. I mean, they were just a bad defense and just happened to have a quarterback who could put up a ton of points. I don't know that they had that this year. I mean, they may be okay on offense, but if they have to average 45 points a game to have a winning record, I don't know how they're going to do that.
Yeah, no, this where Oklahoma State has deceiving statistics because of an incredible offense, Baylor has absolutely spot-on horrible statistics because the defense just wasn't that good.
Yeah, theirs were completely accurate. They had a top-5 offense and a bottom-5 defense, and that is exactly what it was.
Yeah. All right, moving on to number 8, you got Texas Tech. Tommy Tuberville trying to get things back on track. Is where do you, before we sort of get into the strengths and questions, where do you sort of see him as far as the good old fan favorite hot seat goes?
Tuberville is definitely the one coach in this conference who is on the hot seat. Texas Tech collapsed last year, and really you could look at like halftime of the Oklahoma game, which I think was their second conference game. They had a big lead at the half of that game, barely held on over the second half, and after that was just a disaster. I mean, they completely fell apart over the last 7 games where they're losing, you know, by huge scores every week. I mean, they came out the next week and were down, you know, 45-0 at the half against Oklahoma State and never recovered from that. And I don't know that Texas Tech was necessarily that bad. I mean, again, you have another team that just has a system where they're going to throw it 50 times a game, and they're going to put up points that way. Again, they can't stop anybody. They had the worst run defense in the country last year. I mean, just going down the list over the last 4 games, they're giving up, you know, they give up, what, 368 to Iowa State rushing, 439 to Texas, 318 to Missouri, 360 to Baylor. I mean, they were the worst run defense in the country last year. And you cannot, there's just no way that you can win games giving up that kind of yardage. They're experienced on defense this year because they played a lot of guys and a lot of guys who were back, but those guys were not good.
This is actually from you, so it should sound familiar. The front 7 yielded an entire season's worth of gains on the ground in the final 5 games of the season. 1,668 yards and 20 touchdowns.
Yes, they were terrible.
It was absolutely awful. All right, moving on. We got number 9, Iowa State. The upset spoilers. We talked on them a little. Obviously, Paul Rhodes has got them to a place where I guess 2 bowl games in the last 3 years. Obviously, big upsets. But where do you see them falling short? Why do you have them slated right there at number 9?
Well, I don't know. I don't have anything really bad to say about Iowa State because I do think they're well coached. They're a solid team. They were definitely better than Texas Tech last year, but the overall talent level is in a conference that's this deep where you have to play TCU, Kansas State, Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, Texas, West Virginia. How many of those games can they win? I think maybe one, maybe two. Just based on the talent level. They do have some guys who have played before, but I think that with Iowa State, you're always just playing to get into a bowl game, and that's about it.
Yeah. All right, and now we've got number 10, wrapping it up, Charlie Weiss and Kansas. What a huge overhaul. Lots of roster turnover, not a whole lot left from Turner Gill. Is there anything about Kansas that should give a Jayhawk football fan hope moving forward?
Well, yeah, I think just the fact that Weiss came in and immediately just said, I'm not even going to try to play with these guys. I mean, he started overhauling every part of the roster that he could, bringing in transfers at every position that he could, junior college guys. I mean, half of Kansas' starting lineup this year is going to be not only new guys, but like new starters, but guys who weren't even on the team last year. I mean, it's going to be a lot of junior college guys and guys who transferred in from other schools. The most prominent, obviously, being quarterback Dane Chris, who, I still feel like never really got a shot at Notre Dame. I mean, he was a big recruit for Weiss. Jimmy Clausen was Weiss's first big quarterback recruit there. Dane Chris came right after him. They were both five-star guys. Chris really didn't have a chance. Well, Weiss, he was behind Clausen for a couple of years. He hurt his knee. He started 2010, hurt his knee again. Last year he played for one half. So he was named the starter, played for one half, didn't go so well, had a few turnovers, and he was pretty much on the bench for the rest of the year behind Tommy Rees. So I don't know that we've really seen what Dane Chris can do. I think he definitely has the talent. He has the size. He projects as being a pretty good quarterback. So maybe there is some hope there. They're also getting their best receiver back, who redshirted all last year with an injury. So I think the hope for Kansas is maybe you pull an upset here or there, but I think what they're really looking for is just closing the margins, just losing close a little bit instead of losing big. They were blown out so often last year. I think that's just the first step, is just be a little bit more competitive.
All right, let's gonna get you sent out of here on this. What is what's for me? I said it earlier that sometimes my focus, I'm a little, don't always get to write about some of the Big 12 as we sort of divide everything. But damn, I love watching some of those games, especially it always seems to be some game right around a late kick that ends up being close. But, after putting together the Big 12 preview for CBSSports.com and sort of going over everything, what is the one thing about sort of covering the conference this season that you, just personally, from your angle, are really looking forward to?
I think the team that interests me the most is Texas, for the reasons that we've talked about, just because they're right there on the cusp, and they've had they've had a couple of years that have just been very disappointing. Last year started out actually pretty good. I think that there was some optimism there after about the first month of the season. Then they just got blown out by Oklahoma, and it was it was downhill from there. Had a lot of injuries. They haven't been on that elite footing. This team has the potential to do that, but it is all potential right now. I mean, we haven't seen them actually play at that level. They can. It just depends on the development of some of those younger guys who are moving in. They're freshmen and sophomores now. They're sophomores and juniors. And then what you get out of the quarterback. But I think Texas, just seeing how they put everything together this year is really the most interesting thing in the conference.
All right. He is Matt Hinton. You can follow him on Twitter at Matt R. Hinton. You can follow his work and all of our work at the Ion College Football Bloggers at IonCFB. Remember, you can get all of the CBSSports.com college football podcasts at iTunes for the low price of $3.99. Just go up there, click subscribe, and we will deliver the next one as soon as it is posted. Matt, I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, man. It was a good time.
All right. See y'all later.